Recent research suggests a link between intelligence and the frequency of biophotons in animals' brains. I haven't read the original research, but this again, if we're taking in food, and my focus has been on GMOs, but you can look at food in general, fresh, regenerative agriculture produced food that's full of nutrients, etc., would also have a biophoton signature that reflects its internal condition. And that might affect our consciousness and our physiology through this other mechanism of biophoton influence. Now, here's another level. We've talked about the RNA, we've talked about the biophotons. Now we're going to talk about a quantum effect. There was a study that came out in 2008 where they found that strands of DNA that were similar would join up at rates that were twice as frequent as strands that were dissimilar. So there were somehow, and there were no transportation of any materials between them. Now, it could have been biophotons causing this, but I'm going to show some other research that talks about action at a distance that probably is not related to biophotons because light would not necessarily be able to travel in the receiver and transmitter. So here we have a situation where if there's a strand of DNA and there's another strand that's very similar, they find each other and then they move together. And we don't have any idea how they find each other. And when this came out, a couple of genetic engineers that I work with sent it to me, or one sent it to both of us. And I asked him, does this demonstrate quantum field effects or quantum mechanical effects? And they said, apparently it might be doing just that. And it reminded me of this Lindy Hop workshop I had taken in St. Louis. This is Frankie Manning, one of the originators of Lindy Hop, a dance form that I loved to do 25 years ago. And around that time, in the late 1990s, I went to a Lindy Hop workshop in St. Louis. And during the break, a few of us went to a Thai restaurant. And then while we were sitting down, a bunch of other dancers came in and we motioned them over. We hadn't met them before, said, please join us. So we adjusted the table and one of the new folks sat right across from me. And I said to him, so what do you do? He said, I'm a genetic engineer. I work at Monsanto. Does this stuff, you can't make this stuff up. I said, what do you do for Monsanto? He said, well, I test the products for safety, the genetically engineered products for safety. Now, I wasn't an official activist at the time. I was working at a GMO detection laboratory that was neutral on the subject, but their work was very important to allow people to eat and sell non-GMO products. I was happy to work there. And this was a fellow Lindy Hopper, and it was over lunch, so I decided to just go easy. I wrote about this in the book Seeds of Deception. I decided to go easy and just have a light discussion about allergenic constructs in the DNA and how they found out, because I know there's absolutely no way that they can determine by the sequence or even by testing that something will not cause allergic reactions. In fact, in another conversation I had with someone that worked for Monsanto, after this detailed study discussion of all of the amino acid sequence and what's allergenic and what's not, I said to him at the end, but you know, there is no way you can determine in advance if a genetically engineered crop will not cause an allergic reaction in some percentage of the population. Because people need multiple exposures to develop the antibodies. You're using new proteins that have never been part of the human food supply. And there's no way that you can absolutely guarantee it. And he said to me, but we need genetic engineering. So he didn't say to me that I was wrong. He was saying that the benefit to genetic engineering was worth putting people's lives at risk. And I said, "We need genetic engineering?" And he said, "Yeah, because I've been to India and I've seen their agriculture and they need genetic engineering." Well, this is before genetically engineered cotton was released in India, and Monsanto put on this huge marketing effort, getting all of these poor farmers to spend lots more money than they had, to take out loans to get this magic seeds that they were supposed to get rich from. There were so many problems with the cotton. Many of them were unable to pay back their loans. I can go through the list, but I'm going to avoid that now. The bottom line is that over 250,000 farmers who planted GMO cotton ended up committing suicide over a few years because they were in such financial straits, they were risking losing the land that their family had. And if they died, then they were able to, the family would keep the land, and there was some financial support from the suicide. Bizarre situation, but that was just one of the examples. Animals that grazed on the cotton plants after harvest, thousands died. People got itchy reactions from them. This is not something I want to go into in detail, but this is in response to this scientist who said, "We need genetic engineering," because he's seen India's agriculture and they needed it desperately. So, back to the Thai restaurant. So, after talking about to this other scientist who worked at Monsanto, at a certain point, I said, "How do you know?" I said, "At the time when you insert a gene, there's some mutations right in the place of insertion. It's called insertional mutagenesis. Right when you insert the gene, there's some mutations. How do you know that that's not going to cause a problem?" And he said, "Well, we're learning each day more and more about which sections of the DNA or genome are important." Now, they had already been putting out GMO foods, but they're still now learning about which sections of the DNA are important. And I said to him, "What if the whole DNA is important? What if the DNA uses laws of nature that we have not yet defined? What if it uses quantum mechanical laws of nature or quantum field effects? Then we're creating changes in the DNA where you have no idea how to measure it and what the impact is." I finished the question, and there was absolute silence. I mean, a long time. He just started to eat. One of his friends that came with him said, "That's deep." After, I don't know, a long time, he looked up and said, "But you know, we need genetic engineering." I said, "What?" He said, "We need genetic engineering to feed the world." And he started giving this standard answer, like, "By 2000 blank, we're going to have blank number of people, and we need GMOs to feed the world." And I knew he was genuinely believing this. And I knew he was wrong. We now know, and knew then too, but he didn't, that genetic engineering does not improve yield. Yield alone does not feed the world more, because it's distribution and access. And all the world's experts in that will tell you. But even in terms of increased productivity, it doesn't increase average yield. GMOs don't increase average yield. Whereas regenerative agriculture and eco-ecology can double yields. In one of my books, we talk about 12 million farms, or 12 million, yeah, I think 12 million farms, where the average increase in yield was about 72% for natural agroecology methods, not for GMOs. GMOs were so inappropriate for increasing yields and food security that the biggest analysis of what's needed to feed the world. It's called the Istad Report, sponsored by the UN and the World Bank and all these other groups, signed on by 59 countries, determined that GMOs have nothing to offer to feed the world, create sustainable agriculture, or alleviate poverty. But this scientist at Monsanto believed it was true. And remember, he did not answer the question. Just like the other scientists, where I said, you know that you can't rule out allergic reactions. Here I was talking about quantum mechanical and quantum field effects, which years later we have evidence for. And we have evidence for the biophoton aspect for DNA. We have evidence for this impossible telepathic communication on the DNA level, field effects. And so they're going and making changes and have no clue about the impact. So let's come back to the slideshow. There's my friend Frankie Manning, who was my first teacher of Lindy Hop. That's another story. So here's an interesting study where they took human cells and they put two identical groups of cells in separate containers. And they put hydrogen peroxide on one of the cell cultures, and it had effects on protein production and a number of other things. The cells in the separate container had similar impact at the time of adding that toxic soup into the first cells. Here's another one. This is a research 2011. Photon emissions from human brain and cell culture exposed to distally rotating magnetic fields. I don't want to go into the title, it's too complicated. Here's what they did. Light flashes on one group of cells evoked photon emissions on other cells in the dark in another room. So cells were communicating to each other, or the reactions of one were being picked up by the other. There was another increase in photon emissions when the cells were beside the heads of human volunteers if another person in another room saw flashing light. Now, in this case, there had to be shared magnetic fields for that to occur. But that means someone in another room with a flashing light caused cells standing, put next to the head of another person, had the impact. So this is an interesting thing. When I talked about the Marsha Ayurveda, I talked about a resonance theory and I talked about herbs. But the actual lecture, they said this explains the impact of herbs, gems, and mantras. That gemstones are supposed to have an impact, and they're not living. They don't necessarily have biophotons, but there's some kind of influence where they carry some form of sequence of the laws of nature, according to Maharishi Ayurveda, and the mantras are the sounds that are supposed to be the audio presentation or the sound of those laws of nature. We'll get into that in a few minutes. So having these deeper levels of physics and biology might ultimately verify this resonance theory in Maharishi Ayurveda. Now, I did a summit during the lockdown called A Magnificent New Normal. I had 40 people, we had 40 days and 40 nights, one really long in-depth interview with a new person each day. I always ask the first question, what's your vision of a post-pandemic civilization, so they can give us an idea of where we could bring civilization right now. And the second one was, give us all tips as to how we can live the highest version of ourselves. And then we would just go into this long hour and a half deep interview, and I had some great people. And one of the interviews was my friend Bruce Lipton. And in the interview, he told me that there was a study where you take someone's cells and you take it 100 miles away, and then you create a strong emotional reaction in the person, and the cells respond. And that same response can also occur between a mother and her child, because some of the cells from the child stayed in the mother. So this was like field effects without intention, without trying to tell, you know, the cells here that the human is having this effect. It was just measuring it, showing that there is some kind of field effect on a biological level that we don't fully understand. Then I also interviewed Lynn McTaggart, and Lynn has done experiments where individuals and groups of individuals intended to influence biological systems, healing, plants, etc. And she has a number of books on this, also verifying that intending to create changes on the level of consciousness did just that. And there were statistically significant results. Now, I have marinated in the field of consciousness through, you know, tens of thousands of hours of meditation. And I have found that I can access this field at any time. And it's sort of been, I've been learning about how to use it and how to teach people to use it. And a couple of times I went down to my friend's EEG laboratory, and I was doing these healing and transformation techniques that I have found to be very, very effective at helping people do all sorts of things, which I'll explain in a minute. And every time I started the technique, the moment I applied this, what I call quantum consciousness, to these people, their brainwaves changed. And I would do different techniques that I have learned or developed, and there was different changes in their brainwaves each time. And the expert who had done this for 15 years as an expert in terms of neurofeedback, not what I was doing, said that the changes that were happening in the brainwaves corresponded to what would be predicted based on the particular modality that I was using. So we did that in 2023. First, I worked on one person next to him and was able to, this was actually the expert who'd been doing this for 15 years. He'd looked at 30,000 brain scans, and the one that he was most familiar with were his own. So he was looking at his own brain scan with EEG on while I worked on him. And he said there was this one belief pattern that was significant that he couldn't get rid of on his own through his neurofeedback process. So I worked on that, and it was resolved. And he wrote a testimonial saying that he's never been able to do that on his own, and that he noticed changes in the brainwaves, changes in his psyche, etc. And then the next day, I worked on someone in the same lab, but I was down the hall with this expert. His name is G. And he and I were looking at the screen of the person who was connected to the EEG down the hall. And then I would say, okay, and we had notes to say, at this time I'm going to start, and I would just do my applying the quantum field to the person down the hall. The EEG would change, I'd stop, it would shift, and the impacts. We did a follow-up with this woman, and the influence was amazing. She completely changed her life. She was having these reactions to her mom, reactions to her dad, confidence issues, and we worked on those specifically, and her whole life changed, because I went back the beginning of this year and asked her, and it was drastic change. I think that was the word. So then this year I did a whole different set of analyses with someone who had more leads on their brain, more centers, and I'm just now going through the data that was written up by the expert, showing again, each time we did an intervention, there was a change in the brain waves and some very, very significant changes. And then interviewing the person that I worked on, again, dramatic changes in his life that was like a whole revelation. So this, what I'm excited about is sharing this information so that everyone can do this and everyone can benefit from it. So I'm writing a book called Claiming Your Magic. It's not out yet. And I'm going to be starting with releasing stories and explanations of the technique at highestversionofyourself.com. So go to highestversionofyourself.com. Right now, the only thing you'll see is a place to enter your name and email. And then as soon as it's available, I will be sending out little stories that in the book that I'm writing of why this works, how it works, examples of it. And I'm really excited to share that. And I'm also going to include, for anyone that signs up for this online community, all of the 40 interviews from A Magnificent New Normal, including the Bruce Lipton one, Lynn McTaggart, Lynn Twist, the Sue Mortar, Alison Armstrong, Alberto Villoldo, just amazing people, amazing interviews. All and everyone answers the question, how do we get to the highest version of ourselves? I'll also be releasing those answers in the newsletter